Red Bull gedaan.
Ja.
Thank you. It's such a.
Yeah, you can. You know.
Thank you. It is a privilege to be here, especially on today. I need this to be closer. Any closer? This. Thank you very much. This seems to be a day. I'm from America, so I don't have definitive judgment on it, but it seems to be a day where politicians have decided that the internet's not going to come to them, so they better come to our internet. And good decision. Because I think that's right. Understanding that it is our internet, I think, is really the crucial piece of it. Again, I'm listening through translate. I'm not sure exactly. I'm having trouble making a judgment about how well the candidates understand that it's our internet. It's not actually theirs. It's not actually the government's. We built it, and it's ours. So I want to talk about. I want to talk about democracy, and I should warn you. First of all, I'm not. Oh, are we? We're not. Hi, we're over there. Okay, basic stagecraft. So, I want to warn you that I'm not going to focus on leaders and that side of democracy, all of which is a very important thing. Excuse me, it's PowerPoint.
Is this vote?
Oh. Okay, well, this is going to be a problem. Control Alt Delete, I believe.
But
exactly. That usually works.
Yoshi Vardy, the outside management.
So, we'll try this again. I'm not going to be talking about democracy primarily in terms of politics. I could get a few more icons on my desk if you want. But I do want to talk about it. Over the course of the talk, I'll be getting more and more sort of further down the stack and more ridiculous and speculative. So that's just a warning. It was indeed Howard Dean, the campaign, that for the first time, I think, at a national level, grasped what the internet is actually about. And they set out, so here's an amusing slide. Normally there are only two people who are allowed to speak for a campaign. It's the candidate and the press secretary. And the Dean campaign very consciously added a third voice, a blogger, Matthew Gross, who's a kid. He's 31 years old. I mean, that's a kid. Who's a supporter. Who's a blogger and a supporter, and they said, here, take over our front page. And Matthew started blogging as a supporter, writing very frankly. He was not on message. I mean, the essence of blogging is, you know, on message where the candidate repeats the same thing over and over with great discipline, and this is looked at as a good thing, which is why John Kerry lost. Bloggers are not on message. Matthew was not on message. He wrote what he wanted to. He wrote as an enthusiastic supporter, and this told other Dean supporters, told us, that in fact, the campaign trusted us to speak for ourselves, which is a radical idea, even though it's the essence of democracy. That was the blogging, which became the heart of the campaign, for this obscure governor who went on to become the leading candidate, although, of course, he did lose eventually. Nevertheless, he became the leading candidate for months, in part because of the blog and what it inspired. The blog was only part of what they were doing. So they also very consciously, Joe Trippi, the campaign manager, knew what he was doing, and he set about to try to undo the usual model of campaigning, which is exactly the same model as marketing, where except instead of selling soap, you're selling a candidate. So you have one person, the candidate, who has a message, a marketing message, that he and occasionally she repeats over and over and over again, sending it down to the troops, to the foot soldiers, as we say. This is the broadcast model. So the campaign said to itself, this has nothing to do with democracy. This is not what democracy is. What can we do about this? Well, you could try reversing the flow of the broadcast. But when you have a million supporters, Howard Dean is not going to read and answer a million emails. It's not going to happen. So they had to think about another way of breaking the broadcast model that's killing democracy. And so they did this experiment that worked pretty well. Every way they could think of to break up that pyramid, they did. All sorts of ways. And the aim was to, rather than having the candidate speak to the many, or the many speak to the candidate, a million emails, they instead decided they would talk with one another, to form bonds, to engage in political action, to discover what they had in common. And the set of relationships became so thick and messy and so human and so uncontrolled, because that's the heart of blogging and that's the heart of the revolution in politics that's occurring, I hope, is the giving up of control. It enabled these relationships to grow and people to connect and to become not just backers and supporters of Howard Dean, but deaniacs, like maniacs, but deaniacs, who were so enthusiastic and more enthusiastic about the campaign than they were about the candidate. So the candidate was a little crazy. The campaign was really human. And this is just one effect of what happens when broadcast, that metaphor and that medium gets put in its place, when it becomes less important. It doesn't go away, but it becomes less important, and we instead adopt person-to-person technologies, which we are doing, and we're seeing the outcomes of that in blogs and wikis and tagging. But more important than that is what the infrastructure itself is doing to us as citizens, doing for us as citizens. So I want to point to three characteristics of broadcast and talk about each. The first two very quickly, the third one I'm going to go on for a bit. So the first is that, well, as we've heard on the panel today, of course, broadcast is being broken up into episodes that we get to view when we want to, and that's a big change. But there's another change as well. An episode, a show, a program, is self-contained. Starts and it ends. That's it. Well, this is a blog. It's one of the 70 million. And because it's a blog, you can see, maybe a little hard to see in the back, but of course there's lots of blue underlined text. This is Janine Sesson's blog, a very good blog. And she links all the time, just as all of us do, all of the bloggers do. Of course we do. Lots and lots of links all over the place. In fact, this is her blog roll, a list of other blogs she recommends, and that's only up to the D's. Lots and lots of links. And with every link, Janine is doing what every blogger does, which is to say, I'm glad you're here. Thank you for coming to my site. Here's another site you might enjoy. Here's one that you might learn something from or find it interesting. Would you please leave my site? Please, go away. Leave my site. I want you to. I insist. I'm going to tell you how good this other site is. Please go away, because Janine is confident that you will come back because she sent you away. This is what builds the web. No links, no web. It's really just that simple. This is how we build our internet. Out of links. Little acts of generosity. Little bit of selfless. I don't want to make a big deal out of it. It's a little act of generosity, but you put them together and you get the web. So here's another page. Lots of blue underlined text. It's a great site. It's a great newspaper. It must be very generous too. Every one of those links, except for four, points back into the New York Times. And this is completely typical of media sites and of most commercial sites. They're so afraid that we won't find any value there. If we go away, we're not coming back. And they're probably right. So to me, it's hilarious. It's just really, really funny when the media say, as they have in the U.S., that during the denial stage of blogging, of recognizing that blogging's here to stay, when they say, you know, bloggers, it's just this little self-referential world of people who link to each other and they never get out of their parents' house and they're in their pajamas. This is narcissism. This is what narcissism looks like. This is what self-involvement looks like. It's a little tiny narrow slice of understanding this wide. Whereas on the web, we're generous. We're not so involved in ourselves that we can't talk about or send people to another site. And the range of opinion is as wide as the world. This is narcissism. So when the mainstream media criticize blogs as being small and little people, it's us. It's much bigger than they are, by definition. So second characteristic of broadcast is that it has to be simple-minded, because the economics are you're trying to reach as many people as possible, so you have to make the message as broad as possible. This happens in politics too, of course. So when President Bush, and I am so sorry about President Bush, when President Bush gave a talk about immigration, which is as difficult an issue for Americans as it is for you, very complex issue, we know the speechwriters said, of course they said, gotta keep it simple, boil it down, 2,500 words, make it simple for the American people. So he did, of course, or they did for him. And he gave his talk, and within a few hours, I checked checked at Technorati. This talk was 2,500 words long. There are over 2,500 blog posts about it, one per word. And you know what each of these blog posts did. You don't have to read them all to know that every one of them looked at this and found something more complex to talk about. Because that's what bloggers do, right? We take the thing and we say, oh, did you notice on the bottom over here, there's, oh, that's interesting. Do you know that Bush had a different opinion on immigration when he was governor? No, I didn't. Oh, Schwarzenegger now has changed. We find the interesting stuff to talk about because that's what humans do. That's what conversation is. You find a ground of agreement and then you iterate on the differences. You talk about the differences. That's what makes life interesting. So, of course, it's what bloggers do because we're engaged in this worldwide conversation. So, one of the reasons I think that we've embraced blogging, we've gone crazy with blogging, is we're so sick of being treated like idiots. Of being treated as if the only thing that matters to us are the simplest things, when in fact, we love complexity. We love making things complex. And with blogs, we finally get to make the world complex again in the face of a broadcast medium, a marketing medium, a political medium that wants to treat us like fucking idiots. Well, you know what? We're not. Third point, I'm sorry, the F word is permitted or not permitted in France. Okay. And I apologize if it's not. So, the third point I want to spend a little more time on, which is I have trouble talking about it, so I apologize. So I'm going to go about this in a roundabout way. If you look at what's happening with metadata, okay, so it used to be very simple. If you knew the name of the author, but you couldn't remember the work, you go to the search engine or whatever, or card catalog, and you look up the author's name, and you press the search button, and back comes the answer. That's great. Now, as things are getting scanned in, and everything will be scanned in, as it's becoming all digital, we can just as well take a piece of the content, any piece of the content, and say, what book was that in? I can't remember who wrote that article. And press the button, and you'll get the answer. So what's happening is that we used to think there was a difference between metadata and data. Now, there isn't. Metadata is simply the thing that you know, and data is a thing you don't know, but you want to know. This is big, because we use metadata to pry up knowledge. It's a lever for prying up knowledge, and if everything now is metadata, our ability to know has multiplied, it's gone exponential. Everything is a lever to find something else, because everything is connected. Well, I think this has importance beyond this, even. So, if you go into a clothing store, the rational thing to do, you take the shopping cart basket and you just start taking off all the clothes that's in your size. And ignore, just make a huge pile. Because the rest of it is just noise. The rest of the store is just a distraction. If you start doing that, within 90 seconds you'll be thrown out. They will not let you do that. If you have an online store and you don't let your customers do that, they'll throw you out. If you make customers wade through, sort through all the stuff that has no relevancy, you wouldn't do that. We're getting used to the idea that the owners of the information no longer own the organization of that information. We're doing this all over the place. We're doing it quite spectacularly with tags that take the old taxonomies, the old classifications designed by experts, and take them apart. And instead, we get to classify by the ways that matter to us. We get to put them all together. We've taken over the taxonomy. We've taken over the classification. And it's not just in text, it's all over the place. So one of the ways that this matters is in the news media, where for generations now, a room full of basically middle-aged white men, not all that much unlike the panelists and speakers, including me today, a room full of middle-aged white men, decide what goes on the front page, what doesn't get covered, and their judgment is very good because they're experts, but it does not reflect the judgment of anybody, anywhere, the complete judgment. All of us thumb through the paper and make decisions, this isn't interesting. Well, everybody who's on the net now, we're getting our news through the internet. The newspaper is reporting on yesterday's news, and we're getting that news, we're being our own editors, we're getting recommendations from friends through email and mailing lists and sites like Dig, where readers can add their add links and vote on what's going to be on the front page or not. We're constructing our own front page using the internet as a recommendation engine. So I think that the overall point, and then I'm going to make one other point after this, is that we've taken a way of ordering our world that used to look like a tree, you know, a set of classifications, branching classifications designed by experts who excluded most of the information to protect us from it because it's not good enough. We're going from that to pulling down the leads and just making a huge pile and including everything. Because what looks insignificant to you may turn out to be life-saving to you, or you may be a doctoral student who needs exactly that information. So include everything. Why not? Storage is cheap, and especially since now we have these things called computers that can sort through large bodies of material very quickly. We can allow the users to sort and organize on the way out instead of having experts do it on the way in. This has something to do with democracy. So it's not simply a pile of leaves, it's pile of leaves that we're connected. We're drawing the links between them, and we're doing it in part through tagging. A few of us are doing that. That hasn't, you know, that's still a small phenomenon, but it'll grow. We're doing it through standard and using experts in their taxonomies. Those are at front pages. Those are important. We're doing it through the semantic web. We're doing it through every link and every blog that we make by hand. We're doing it through playlists for music and books and courses and playlists all over the place. Every time we do one of these, we're adding connections, we're adding links. We're doing it through the headline stuff and newspapers, and we're doing it through every single hyperlink that we make. Add some order to the leads without having to rearrange the leads, because it's all just metadata. So you can have as many different connections as you want forever. So the last thing I want to talk about is this is Martin Heidegger, not a nice person, so I'll say, 1927, but a pretty good philosopher. Wrote Being in Time, in which he talks about what it means to be, say, a hammer, just as an example. And he says something very sensible, which is for us to know what a hammer is, forget all the philosophy stuff, but, you know, just what is a hammer? Well, to know what a hammer is, you really have to know what nails are. And to know what nails are, you have to know what wood is, because otherwise you don't really understand nails. And to know what wood is, you have to understand the lumber. Lumber yards come from trees, which are in forests, which are connected by an economic system. They grow on the earth, under the sun. You have to know all that to know what a hammer is. That, in fact, what this is describing is meaning. That meaning, the meaning of a hammer depends upon seeing it in this broad context of connection, one thing to another, which eventually includes everything. So one more step. So as many have pointed out, human consciousness, our species, seems to advance by externalizing functions of consciousness in the way that writing externalizes memory and books externalize knowledge and calculators externalize arithmetic. So I want to make a speculative suggestion, which is that we are now, right now, in the process of externalizing meaning. That all the things that we do that add value to the web, that make connections one to another, whether we're making them on purpose or they're just happening, it's adding to the meaning available worldwide, that we are building an infrastructure of meaning, and that this is a generational task, and it's within this infrastructure of meaning that knowledge occurs and knowledge gets understood. Well, this is, meaning is a way of sharing the world. Right? It's how we live in a shared world. We share resources, sometimes different. We share land. That's very hard sometimes. There's a limited amount of stuff. But underneath all that is we share meanings. We share understandings of the world. So what we're now building together on a global scale for the next coming generations is an infrastructure of meaning that will allow us, if we permit it, that will allow us to share our world together in a meaningful way, at the level of meaning, not just at the level of resources. This is not easy, because we have to then make sense of the meaning that's there, but it gives us a potential. It means we need to get past, we need to both observe the difference that we find, the differences we find in this infrastructure of meaning, but also engage with it. Conversation is a good model for doing this. An infrastructure of meaning has never, on a global scale, has never happened before. It is a treasure, it's a richness that we're building that I think and I hope it is our best hope for actually living together peacefully. Thanks.